Chapter 8. Scott really isn't sure about the idea of breaking into Dr. Deaton's office, even though they now have solid evidence that he knows who the sorcerer is. He squirms and hems and haws while Stiles waits and thinks quietly, privately to himself, that Scott's moral compass can really be a pain in the ass sometimes. Eventually, Scott comes to the conclusion that pack welfare is more important than A, his job, or B, Dr. Deaton's feelings. He forks over the key to the clinic. They wait until late, long after Stiles should be in bed, and he divides the pack up evenly again, because breaking into a clinic will be hard enough with 4 people, let alone 8. Derek, Allison, and Erica accompany him, while the rest stay back at Derek's apartment. Sheriff Stilinski has opted to work night shift, so he can personally field any calls about suspicious activity down at the animal clinic. But it goes over so smoothly that Stiles keeps waiting for the other shoe to drop. The key works, there's no alarm, the mountain ash doesn't stop them. He goes into Deaton's office and boots up the computer. It's an old-fashioned model that doesn't even have a log-on screen, let alone ask for a password. He looks for Chrome or Firefox, but to no avail, so he sighs and pulls up Internet Explorer. A quick view of the history reveals that Dr. Deaton uses Gmail, so at least he's not completely untech-savvy. Stiles clicks on it and holds his breath. A moment later, it loads the mailbox. Yes! Yes, what? Allison asks, from where she's standing guard at the door. He leaves himself logged in, Stiles says. I was worried I was going to have to hack into his email, which would have been way easier said than done. He seems generally more cautious than that, Erica says, frowning. Yeah, Stiles says, and leaves it at that. He has a suspicion that Dr. Deaton knew exactly what he planned to do, and left himself logged in to make it easier on Stiles. His debt prevents him from outright showing Stiles the emails, but apparently it does not mean he needs to stop Stiles from looking at them himself. A curious code of morals. The email is full of completely unrelated messages. Updates from animal shelters, questions from patients, recalls on pet food. There are at least 3 that come from unknown sender. The first is dated the day before Derek was first sick. The second, the day before Stiles' attack in the parking lot. And the third, just hours previous. Each one, as Deaton had said, contains a little poem. Haiku, Stiles says. What? Derek says. Stiles flaps his hand and says, it's a Japanese form of poetry with 5... I'm aware what a haiku is, Stiles. Derek says, I'm just wondering why in God's name anybody would be sending haikus to Dr. Deaton. Get in line, Stiles says. He reads the first out loud. Darkness descending. Onto the son of the cursed. Will dawn break in time? There's a moment of silence. Shit, Erica says. Derek, that's you. The son of the cursed. It's about you being sick. Right, Stiles says. And the second one is about me. The red sun rises. His blood is spilled. He cries out. And nobody comes. Stiles is meditating on that for a second before delivering his opinion. Melodramatic little fucker, isn't he? Very evocative imagery, Allison muses. I actually kind of like it. All the contrast between light and dark, the color red, the wordplay with sun and sun. She gives a defensive look as Stiles arches an eyebrow at her. What? Sometimes poetry should be melodramatic. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Point, Stiles says. Erica lets out a snort of laughter despite herself. Okay, so he's sending Deaton love notes about what he's going to do. Or what he's done. Stiles shakes his head. Both of these first two arrived before the events in question. The first arrived the day before you got sick, and the second one arrived over the weekend, and the attack was on Monday. I think Dr. Deaton didn't see them at first. It looks like they were flagged as spam, probably because of the unknown sender stuff. after he realized who the guy was, I bet he went back and looked to see if the guy had tried to contact him, and found them then. So let's hear the third one, Erica says. Styles clears his throat. The road less traveled, the purity of a soul, standing on the edge. Oh, that's fucking helpful, Derek says, rolling his eyes. Yeah, I have a feeling that these are going to be painfully obvious in retrospect, but completely useless beforehand, Styles agrees. Still, he prints out a copy of each of them, including the sender's information, and then shuts the computer down. The four of them depart in silence. Styles sleeps restlessly, trying to tease out the meaning behind the third poem for most of the night, staring at the ceiling and silently mouthing the words. He hopes that the soul in question is not his, and that moral questions about what he's willing to do to protect his pack are not going to arise. When he finally does sleep, he has bad dreams, with plenty of the aforementioned evocative imagery. So it's a rather surly and grumbly Styles that is packed off to school the next morning. Sheriff Stilinski has been on the phone, clearing everything so Derek can accompany him. It's fortunate that Styles had foreseen the fact that this might happen someday, and so Derek actually is registered as a service animal. After his hospitalization, post-Alpha Pack, when Derek had been allowed into his room as an emotional support dog, it had occurred to him that it wouldn't be a bad idea to make it official. A great deal of research and paperwork later, and one long-suffering evaluation of Derek by a dog behaviorist, and they had everything put together. Just in case. Styles lives for just in case. So once all the paperwork has been provided to the school, there aren't any problems. Stilinski tells him that all his teachers have been notified that he'll have the dog with him, so there shouldn't be any surprises. Derek puts on the vest and collar with decently good grace and hops into the back of the Jeep. For most of the morning, everything goes better than expected. Styles and Jack get plenty of attention, although plenty of other people give the huge wolf a wide berth. Styles hears, "He looks more like a wolf," at least 8 times every hour. Every time someone asks, "What the hell do you have a service dog for?" he has a new, clever answer. "To carry my backpack. To help me pick up chicks. To play lacrosse with me." And his personal favorite, "To answer stupid questions about why I have a service dog." History is especially interesting, because the teacher asks Styles to stay behind for a minute and then asks him if he'd be willing to speak to the class about his PTSD. "They're going to be covering the disorder in some detail," she says, "when they go over the period after the Vietnam War, since so many soldiers had been affected by it." She doesn't know why Styles has PTSD. None of the teachers were told. So it's up to him if he's willing to talk about it. "Just think about it for now," she says, when Styles hesitates. "I won't need an answer for a while." After that is gym class. So, by necessity, he's separated from Derek for a little while the class separates into teams and plays volleyball. Derek sits on the edge of the court and keeps a keen eye out for any rogue balls that might hit him. The enforced separation, no matter how brief, coupled with the physical exertion of the game, leaves Styles feeling somewhat edgy. He has to duck into the bathroom to change, since there are still 2-inch gashes across his abdomen, held together with thick, wiry thread. It's healing well, and he's getting the stitches out that afternoon, but he won't be able to let his classmates see him shirtless for weeks, and even then he's going to need to come up with some sort of explanation for the scars. At lunch, they claim their usual table, and all seems to be well, until Jackson walks over to the table, just as Styles is getting up to visit the vending machines. He feels like caffeine is going to be necessary if he wants to make it through the rest of the day. The vending machines aren't supposed to have soda, but several of the upperclassmen long ago bribed the people who fill it to do so with soda instead of the health drinks it's supposed to serve. To be fair, Styles is pretty sure that Coke isn't much worse than vitamin water. He turns as he gets up, and then Jackson is right there, getting in his face. "What the fuck is this?" Jackson asks. "Your general lack of respect for my personal space?" Stiles asks, trying not to get panicky, because this is Jackson, for Christ's sake. And if there's one person in this entire school that he can handle, it's Jackson. That, Jackson says, pointing at Derek, is not a fucking dog. Stiles looks down at Derek. Then he looks back at Jackson. What are you going to do? Cry about it? Jackson's jaw sets in that stubborn expression. It looks like he might say something about werewolves. But then Danny wanders up behind him, taking in the situation with that calm expression of his. That expression that means, Jackson is being a jerk again. I'd better go make sure no violence occurs. Stiles often wonders exactly why Danny bothers wasting his time being Jackson's BFF. Since Danny doesn't know anything about werewolves, Jackson instead says, What the fuck do you need a service dog for? He screens my calls, Stiles says. Looks like I'm not going to accept yours. Jackson reaches out as if to grab him by the shoulder, but Derek is suddenly on his feet and between the two of them. It takes all of Stiles' formidable willpower to keep his eyes from glowing crimson, and he's not entirely sure if he manages it. But he does look at Jackson and say quietly, Don't, Jackson. Just don't. Not today. Don't go there. Jackson's scowl intensifies. You can't bring a fucking wolf to school, asshole. What? Are you worried he's going to steal your new girlfriend because he's so much better looking than you? Stiles retorts, and several people nearby let out muffled snickers. You can't just do whatever you want, Jackson says. Somebody ought to teach you that. Oh, and that's going to be you? Stiles asks. Have a freebie, Jackson. Go home and talk to your dad. You know, the district attorney. Go cry to him, and he'll tell you that any student is allowed to have a service animal, physical or psychological, as long as all the proper paperwork is filed, and that there ain't shit you can do about it. And yeah, before you ask, all the proper paperwork is filed. Do you think I'm fucking new? I think you're not as fucking smart as you think you are, Jackson says. And somewhere, somehow, there's something you've missed. And I'm going to find it. Okay, Stiles says. You have a jolly good time with that. Jackson takes a step back, and for a minute, it looks like that might be the end of it. But then Jackson abruptly jerks forward. It's a dick move, the kind of feint a guy does to make someone flinch. Stiles doesn't flinch. He reacts. He's trained for combat, drilled to defend himself against threats. On a better day, he might have been able to hold the conditioned response back, but tense and edgy as he is, there's no chance. He moves without any shred of thought, one hand coming out in a loose fist so his knuckles jut out in front, colliding with Jackson's throat. When Jackson staggers back, Stiles' other hand comes out and grabs the other teenager's shoulder like a vice, his knee hiking up into Jackson's groin. The third part of this martial arts trifecta that Chris taught Allison and Allison taught the pack is a hard downward elbow strike on the back of the neck, which is now neatly exposed because Jackson has doubled over. Stiles doesn't make it that far. The first two moves take the space of a few seconds, but then Derek has jumped up on him, knocking him back and onto his ass. Scott and Danny have moved between Stiles and Jackson, the latter a little more slowly. Scott has a grim face on. Danny is too stunned to have much of an emotional reaction to what just happened. The hard impact with the floor brings Stiles back to earth, and he realizes exactly what he just did, that if he'd been allowed to go another moment unchecked, he could have really hurt the older teenager. Already he can hear Scott trying to confirm if Jackson's larynx is injured, or just his pride. Okay, he's okay, Scott says, and Stiles feels some of the tension flood out of his body. He's going into overload now, the way he did after the attack in the parking lot. Time to let someone else handle things, he decides, and presses his back against the wall, pulling his knees up to his chest, and hiding his face in his arms. He can feel Derek's reassuring bulk between him and the world. Nearly a full minute has passed, the buzz of conversation washing over Stiles' ears without sinking in, when a sharp voice says, What's going on here? Harris, Of course, it would be Harris. He's like a plague on Stiles' school life. He keeps his face in his arms and just listens. A moment later, Jackson says, "Nothing." His voice is ragged, but he's talking, so clearly his windpipe wasn't broken. Stiles supposes that's a good thing. It's also a good thing that Jackson isn't about to admit that he got his ass handed to him by Stiles Stilinski in under 5 seconds.
"We were just talking."
"Really?" Harris asks acerbically, and Scott and Danny both immediately jump in to confirm Jackson's story, because bro code covers this sort of situation in detail. Then Harris says, "Jesus, what is that thing doing here?" Stiles feels more than hears Derek's hackles rise. Scott jumps in, saying hastily, "It's Stiles' service dog. He cleared it through the office and everything. His dad called and talked to Principal Finch."
"We'll see about that," Harris says. "Get up, Mr. Stilinski. There's no need to make a scene."
Now Stiles hears Derek growl, which he knows means that Harris is about to grab him and try to haul him to his feet. Of course, this only makes the situation worse, because Harris is protesting in an outraged tone about how the dog had just growled at him, and such an aggressive animal shouldn't be on school property. And Stiles thinks, abstractly, that Harris is one hell of a hypocrite to be complaining about making a scene. Even so, he needs to get a handle on things, fast. So he scrapes up enough self-control to raise his head and look up. He sees Jackson, gingerly holding one hand to his throat while Danny hovers behind him, somewhat nervously, his pack gathered in a tight knot around their table. He gives a brief nod to Scott when he catches the other teenager's eye, to indicate that he's okay, or at least getting there. Harris sees him look up and says,
"Give that leash to me, Mr. Stilinski. I'm taking this animal to the principal's office."
Stiles' reaction to that statement is just as immediate and forceful as his reaction to Jackson's faint. Derek doesn't even have time to protest on his own. Stiles' lip curls back, baring his teeth in an expression that would have done any wolf proud, and he snarls out,
"I will see you in hell before I see you take him away from me."
Shocked silence greets this remark. Stiles scrambles back up to his feet, grabs his backpack, and leaves the cafeteria at a brisk pace. Harris shouts after him, something sharp and angry that he completely ignores. Whatever it is, it isn't worth it. Despite the fact that there are 11 minutes of lunch left, and he never did get his soda, he goes to his pre-calc class and pokes his head in. The teacher is sitting at the desk, grading papers.
Hey, Ms. Atwell, he says. I know I'm a little early, but I just wanted to get a little studying done for today's quiz. It was too loud in the caf. Is that okay?
Sure, she says, gesturing with her pen. She gives Derek a somewhat curious nod, but like all the teachers, was briefed on his sudden appearance, so says nothing about it. Stiles sits down and opens his textbook and stares down at the page for a long minute, letting some of the tension drain out of him until he feels almost drowsy with the release. Derek lifts his head and makes a little questioning noise.
"All right," Stiles murmurs, and tries to focus on his math quiz, and wonders exactly how much trouble he's going to be in soon.
Stiles is somehow not at all surprised when he's paged down to the principal's office during his last class of the day, which is literature. He's glad he can rely on Lydia to take thorough notes for him, since he doubts he'll be back. He shoulders his bag, picks up Derek's leash, and leaves the classroom. It's worse than he expected. Not only is Mr. Harris in the office, but his father is too. "Hi, Dad," Stiles says, bumping shoulders with the man. "I must really be in trouble now, huh?" Principal Finch sighs. "Have a seat, Mr. Stilinski. You're not in trouble. There are just a few things we need to talk about." He waits until Stiles has sat down, with Derek obediently lying down at his feet, although his gaze is fixed on Harris. "Now, it's no problem for you to have your service dog here," he says, "but it can't disrupt the education of other students."
"Right," Stiles says. "I absolutely agree with you."
Finch gives him a narrow-eyed look. "Mr. Harris is concerned that your dog is aggressive."
"No," Stiles says, trying to be patient and sound like a reasonable human being, instead of someone who really wants to nail Harris in the solar plexus. It would be so satisfying. My dog was performing his duties. He growled at me, Harris says, folding his arms over his chest. Yes, Stiles says, to warn you away from touching me. He didn't bite you or physically assault you. He just growled at you. He gestures to Derek and says, do you have any doubt at all that this dog could hurt you if he really wanted to? Finch rubs his hands over his face. That's not really comforting, Mr. Stilinski. It doesn't really matter, Stiles says. You are required by disability law to allow any student with a service dog to have that dog on the premises at all times. Well, what exact service does he provide? Harris asks, his nose in the air. I don't have to tell you that. The principal sighs. Come on, Mr. Stilinski. This isn't a court of law, and you have no need to plead the Fifth Amendment. I'm not pleading anything. I'm just saying that I don't have to explain myself to him. And in fact, he might prefer it if I didn't. But since you asked so nicely, okay, I have a service dog because I have post-traumatic stress disorder. Why is that? Because last winter, a psycho kidnapped me, physically assaulted and intimidated me, and then left me in the trunk of his car for 2 days. And he did that because he was trying to get revenge on Kate Argent for burning his entire family to the ground. Which she did with the help of someone in this room. Let's see, who was that? Oh, that's right, Mr. Harris. It was you. And it's not too late to charge you for that crime, so maybe you should lay the fuck off me and my fucking service dog. Finch's mouth is hanging open slightly. Sheriff Stilinski rubs both hands over his face. Stiles. Harris is turning bright red with rage and embarrassment. You. As I explained to your father at the time, that was... I had no idea what she was going to do with that information. Oh, okay, Stiles says. Because you can just tell anybody how to start a fire that won't look like arson and trust that they obviously have the best intentions in mind, if they're asking that. No problem. Stiles, his father says, drop it. That's between Mr. Harris and the police department, and you shouldn't even know about it. How does he know about it? Harris grinds out between his teeth. Since I read all my father's files, is obviously only going to get more people in more trouble. Stiles says, I heard it from Derek Hale. He had a right to all the information concerning the murder of his family, and he had a right to impart that information to anyone he chose, which, in this case, was me. By the way, he thinks you're a despicable waste of oxygen, just so you know. Regardless, says Finch, who obviously feels that he's out of his depth and wants to steer the conversation back onto territory he's comfortable with. I think it would be a good idea to have the dog evaluated by a behaviorist who can vouch that he's not aggressive. Stiles bites his lip and tries not to laugh. Okay, he says. I mean, they wouldn't have certified him as a service dog if he was, but sure, if it'll make you feel better. He'll call Dr. Deaton and set something up. The veterinarian will doubtlessly think it's hilarious. I think it would be in everyone's best interest, Finch says. Another point of contention is your own behavior in the cafeteria, he continues, specifically what you said to Mr. Harris. Stilinski arches his eyebrows at his son. What did you say to Mr. Harris? Stiles' flat gaze never leaves Mr. Harris. I said, I'll see you in hell before I see you take my dog away, he says, and his father lets out a little sigh. I'm sure you can see why that was inappropriate, Finch asks, obviously hoping that Stiles will agree with him and not make an issue out of it. Oh yeah, Stiles says, absolutely. I should have said, I'll see you 6 feet underground. Religion has no place in schools. Separation of church and state. The sheriff looks at the ceiling, as though praying for patience. Even Derek lets out a little sigh, but then presses his nose into Stiles' hand to indicate that he appreciates the sentiment. Finch's jaw is slightly open, and Harris is still that dull shade of red. "Threatening a teacher is unacceptable," Finch finally says. "A lot of schools would expel you for that."
"Oh, okay," Stiles says. "Expel me for something I said while having a traumatic episode when someone tried to take my emotional support and service animal away. I'll take you to fucking court and I'll fucking win."
Stilinski clears his throat and says, "Regardless of my son's terrible language, which, yes, I will have a word with him about, he's correct. The whole point of having a service dog here with him is because he's not always in control during one of the episodes."
"Well," Mr. Harris says smugly, "if your son is really that disturbed, he shouldn't be in school at all."
At this, Stiles abruptly stands and turns to leave the room. "Where are you going?" Principal Finch asks.
"I don't have to sit here and listen while he runs his mouth off about something he knows nothing about," Stiles says. "I'm leaving."
"Stiles," his father says, trying to placate him, although he obviously wants to punch Mr. Harris in the face.
"Don't Stiles me, Dad. You want to shove Mr. Harris in a trunk and leave him there for 2 days so he'll know what the fuck it's like? Go right ahead. Until that option is on the table, I'm out of here."
He turns and walks out. Derek picks up the end of his leash in his mouth and trots after him. Stiles just walks for a little while. His body is actually trembling from rage. He wonders abstractly how he can survive rogue alphas and hunters with automatic rifles and warlocks with voodoo dolls, but then lose his shit at a petty dick of a teacher, making him seem like the unreasonable one. The tension builds up until he's out of the school and in the parking lot, and then Derek takes his sleeve in his mouth as he's starting to get in the Jeep. The obvious message is, don't drive a car right now, idiot. So Stiles just sits down on the ground there in the lot, leaning against the front tire.
"I hate this," he says,
his throat clogged with some strange combination of fury and grief.
"I hate this. I can never fucking get away from it. I wouldn't give up the pack for anything, but sometimes I just want to go back to the way things were before Peter showed up. I want to be the spastic kid who makes smart remarks, not this traumatized fuck-up who can't spend more than 2 minutes in a bathroom without panic setting in. I want to be the lame varsity bench warmer, not the boy in red who's so badass that people come from out of town to try to frickin' kill him. I'm so tired of all this bullshit."
Derek lets out a little whine and rests his head against Stiles' shoulder. This summer, after the whole thing with the Alpha Pack, things were good for a while. I thought things were going to be okay, that I was going to be okay. But I'm not, am I? I'm never going to be okay. Not 100%. Not ever again. Derek sighs and looks around to make sure nobody is nearby, then shifts into his human form, shrugging out of the vest as he does so. Nobody is 100% okay. Not you, not me, not your dad, not even Harris. That's not PTSD or werewolves or warlocks. That's just life. Stiles rubs a hand over his face.
Yeah, but...
I'm not saying you're wrong, Derek says. Just that Jackson and Harris aren't worth getting upset over. Just remember that they are arrogant, petty douchebags who live boring, ordinary lives, and you're going to live an amazing life. It may not always be easy or pretty or fun, but it will be amazing.
Stiles blinks at him for a moment.
Wow, he says. Derek, that was really eloquent.
What?
Derek blinks at him, then scowls and actually turns pink.
Shut up.
Stiles bumps shoulders with him.
No, I mean it. Thanks.
Still blushing furiously, Derek says, are we gonna go home or what?
Sure, Stiles says, grinning and getting to his feet.
Derek gets into the front seat, totally oblivious to the fact that most people riding in cars wear clothing.
You know, though, you're fucked now. Because now that Harris doesn't want you at school, if we let you stop coming, he'll have won. Which means...
Oh, God, Derek says, his voice full of heartfelt horror. I'm going to have to keep going to high school.
Sorry, dude, Styles says, laughing. But you can only blame yourself.
And Harris, Derek mutters.
Right, Styles says. And Harris.
They head back to the house. Styles sends out a quick text to let everybody know he left school early. He's with Derek. Don't worry. The day's events annoy him, because he wanted to talk to Danny about getting help tracking where those emails came from. Obviously, that won't be happening today. He'll have to tackle it tomorrow. Hopefully he can corner Danny at lacrosse practice and not have to let Jackson know that they're talking. They've only been home about 10 minutes, and Styles is in the process of searching for that last can of Dr. Pepper that he knows is in the fridge somewhere, when the door opens and his father calls out, Styles? In a worried tone of voice. He's obviously seen the Jeep and knows that Styles is home, but is afraid of what he might find. The look on his face when Styles heads into the hallway, whole and unharmed, and even looking relatively perky, is one of intense relief. Hey, Dad, Styles says, popping the top on the can of soda. Sorry I stormed out like that.
It's fine, Stalinski says, hooking an arm around Styles' shoulder and giving him a quick hug. Honestly, I think you did the right thing. You were about to lose your temper, and although by God I wouldn't have blamed you, it would have just made things worse in the long run.
What happened after I left?
Principal Finch and I had a long discussion about why Harris's lack of compassion and basic understanding of student psychology makes him a really lousy teacher.
And?
He's 1 year away from tenure.
Styles laughs, startled.
Jesus, Dad! Don't tell me that! I'll make it my life mission to make sure he's fired before the end of the year!
Stalinski looks a little amused. Why do you think I told you?
Point, Styles says. Anything else I should know?
You did get a detention.
For having a service dog? Styles asks.
No, his father says. You've got a detention for saying, I'll see you in hell to a teacher. Because apparently that's unacceptable, no matter how small-minded and petty an asshole that teacher is. I tried to get it so that you wouldn't have to serve it with Harris himself, but of course he insisted. At least I got it put on a Friday so you wouldn't have to miss lacrosse practice.
Gee, a detention on a Friday. Just what I always wanted, Styles says. How can I ever thank you enough?
I'm sure you'll find a way. Stalinski gives him a look. You okay?
Yeah, I think so, Styles says. I mean, not 100%, but Harris isn't worth getting upset over. As long as nobody actually tries to expel me, I can handle serving a detention. It'll be worth it to see the look on Harris's face when the entire pack shows up and insists on having the detention with me.
Oh, geez, Stalinski says, but he's laughing. Take photos.
And to be fair, I do deserve the detention, Styles says, because it's not like I didn't know what I was saying to Harris. I mean, it's all well and good to avoid expulsion by painting it like I had no idea what I was saying, but yeah, I totally knew. I even knew it was wrong. It was just, can I get away with saying that it was the wolf? His father gives him another one of those looks that seem to see everything. Then his gaze flicks over to Derek, who's leaning against the door into the kitchen, saying nothing.
Yeah, kid, he says. I think I'll give you that this time.
Awesome! Sorry they called you down here about that bullshit.
I've been called to your principal's office for worse reasons. I'll make it.
As it turns out, Styles has no trouble cornering Danny without Jackson around, because Jackson isn't in school the next day. According to Scott, he had gone home after lunch the day before, complaining to the nurse about a stomach ache. Styles, who knows exactly how much force he had applied behind the knee to Jackson's groin, can't completely blame him. He counts his blessings again that Jackson hadn't wanted to admit what had happened. He really would have gotten suspended if a teacher found out about the fight. So the school day passes without incident, with Derek trotting along at his side in his little blue vest.
And if Stiles gets some strange looks from people who witnessed the fight, he does his best to ignore them. He decides to approach Danny after lacrosse practice, because the older teenager always takes a while to change afterwards. Danny doesn't fit many gay stereotypes, but he does take fashion pretty seriously. He never leaves the locker rooms without a shower and at least 5 minutes to fix whatever damage has been done to his hair. Once the locker room has basically emptied out, and Stiles has changed back into his regular clothes, he finds Danny standing in front of one of the mirrors, wearing only his jeans and combing his hair. "Hey, can we talk for a sec?" Danny glances at him and says, "Sure." And then, after only a beat and a glance down at where Derek is sitting patiently at Stiles' feet, "Dude, what the hell was that yesterday?" Stiles knew the question was coming, and he's not happy about it, but Danny has a right to ask. He's thought about this, and decided that a little bit of truth won't hurt here. He's asking Danny for a favor, after all. "Look, can I tell you something, and have your word you won't spread it around?" "Sure," Danny says again, and blinks at him, then gives a faint frown and repeats himself. "Yeah, sure, I'm not a gossip, you know." "I know." Stiles swallows, a little convulsively. This is the first time he will tell anyone who wasn't actually there when it happened about the previous winter. The cops at the station all knew about it. His father is the one who briefed the teachers. When things had been explained to new PAC members, other people had always told that part of the story for him. "I have a service dog because I have post-traumatic stress disorder. Because I... last winter, I was assaulted." He lets that sink in for a minute, knowing how Danny is bound to interpret that word, letting him have his own version of events, because that's easier than werewolves. He sees the other teenager's eyes widen slightly, and he stammers a little. "Geez, I'm sorry, I..." Stiles shakes his head a little. "Yeah, I know, you don't have to find something eloquent to say to that. That's cool." He folds his arm over his stomach defensively, not even really aware that he's doing it. Derek leans against his leg, a solid, reassuring weight there. "Afterwards, the guy put me in the trunk of his car. It took my dad 2 days to find me. Remember when I missed the week of school? Yeah, I didn't have pneumonia. I had dehydration and hypothermia, and also the epic screaming memes." He shrugs a little. "My dad enrolled me in martial arts and self-defense classes because he thought that it might help me feel safe. Unfortunately, all it really did was turn me into a loaded weapon without the best of control. That's what you saw yesterday. Dude, I know Jackson was just being a dick. I know that he wasn't actually going to hurt me or even take a swing at me. I just reacted instinctively. So now you know why I have a service dog. And yes, you are the only person in the school that I've told outside of my circle of friends. And no, that's not actually why I needed to talk to you." There's a pause while Danny considers this. He pushes his hands through his hair, ruining all the work he just did, and lets out a breath, seeming a little relieved that he's not going to have to find anything to say about all this. "Okay, what's up then?" "Need your help with a little computer stuff. Got some free time tonight?" Now Danny's eyes narrow. He's well aware that when Stiles says computer stuff, he means illegal hacking. "Doing what?" "There's some emails that a friend of mine has gotten that I'm trying to trace." Danny considers this for a minute. "Yeah, okay," he says. "If you do something for me in return." "Let's hear it. Will you stop making out with Lydia whenever Jackson's around? It really bothers him." Stiles rolls his eyes. "Let's have a few words for how much sympathy I don't have for Jackson fucking Whitmore right now. Look, I know the guy is an epic douche sometimes, okay?" Danny says. "And I know he treated Lydia like shit, and she was my friend too. Believe it or not, I had some pretty harsh words for him at the time about the way he broke up with her. But can you just suspend your disbelief long enough, pretend Jackson is a human being, and recognize the fact that he has feelings too?" There's a long pause. "No," Stiles says, and Danny laughs despite himself. I won't stop making out with Lydia because of Jackson's feelings, but I will do it for you, in return for the computer help. As long as you understand that I won't be held responsible if she finds someone else to make out with instead.
It won't bother him as much if it's not you, Danny says. Deal.
Stiles shakes his head a little and says, I'm not sure if that's meant to be a compliment or an insult. Why the fuck do you even put up with him?
Danny gives him a glance and gives the comb one final run through his hair. Then, seeming to decide that Stiles' earlier honesty deserves some in return, he says, because he stood by me when I came out of the closet. When I tried to tell him I couldn't be his friend anymore because he wouldn't be popular if his best friend was a fag, he told me to go to hell and that he'd be friends with whoever he wanted to be friends with and fuck anyone who had an opinion about it. That's why.
Stiles thinks this over. Okay, he says. I can accept that. He follows Danny over to his locker, where he grabs his shirt and pulls it on, careful not to mess up his hair.
It's kind of urgent, so... When isn't it in your world?
Danny rolls his eyes and sits down to put his sneakers on. Stiles waits and pulls out his phone to text the others, letting them know that he's going back to the house with Danny, who's going to do the computer stuff. He'll keep them posted and meet them all back at Derek's apartment once it's done. Once they're back at his place, Stiles sets his laptop down on the kitchen table and gives Danny a copy of the 3 emails. He frowns at them and says, Wouldn't it be easier to just log on to your friend's account so I can see them there?
Easier, definitely, Stiles says. But it's not gonna happen.
So when you say these emails have been sent to a friend of yours?
I'm using the term loosely, Stiles admits.
Derek gives a huff of a sigh and trots across the room to curl up on the sofa.
Danny shakes his head at him. One of these days, dude, you're going to have to tell me exactly why you need so much illegal hacking done in your life.
Look, Stiles says, sometimes, you know, I follow up on leads for my dad, and sometimes there's information that he needs that he can't get legally. Like, let's say that these emails came from someone that we are pretty sure has committed a crime, but he doesn't have evidence that the guy committed a crime, so he can't get a warrant to do this legally. However, if information gotten through illegal means is given to the police as an anonymous tip, it's admissible in a court of law, because it's not the police's fault if it was gotten illegally, right?
So you're an anonymous tip? Danny asks, somewhat skeptically.
Basically, yeah, Stiles says. If my dad says a case is bothering him, I might sometimes look into it. Hey, you know why I was asking you last winter. Because I knew Gerard Argent was the one who had hit my dad with his car, but I couldn't prove it unless I could find the car itself. I leveled with you. This is a similar situation.
Danny looked at the text of the emails. It seems kind of cryptic.
Yeah, the guy's definitely a drama queen, Stiles agrees. I just want to know from where the emails have been sent, so maybe I can find it.
Okay, Danny says, and starts typing. Man, a net zero account. I didn't think those actually still existed anymore.
He shakes his head a little. Stiles leans over his shoulder and watches what he's doing. He's been learning bits and pieces of the hacking craft, but in amongst everything else in his life, it's been pushed to the background. Having Danny available to do it for him has kept him from making it into a priority. He supposes he should learn it before they all go off to college, a goal that seems about as far away as winning the Super Bowl. It takes about an hour of typing and muttering and sometimes cursing, but finally Danny says, Okay, I've got the IP address. Hold on. More typing then. Well, it's local. It's the IP that the Starbucks on State Street uses.
Fuck, Stiles says. Free Wi-Fi. That's about as good as fuck all.
Sorry, Danny says. Nah, it's cool, Stiles says. It was a shot in the dark. I knew it might not pay off. Thanks for your help. They chat for a few minutes about lacrosse and their history exam coming up, and why Harris is the biggest jerk ever, and maybe they should egg his car. And then Danny departs.
Stiles sighs and stares glumly at his laptop, at the screen that Danny left him with the IP information. He sits there for a long minute, until he hears Derek get up and shift, and then arms wrap around him from behind, Derek's chin resting on his shoulder. "You'll find him," is all Derek says. "Yeah," Stiles says. "Maybe that's the worst part. He wants me to find him. This is a game. Somewhere in here, he's left me a move. I just have to find it."